From Post Media, I'm Ewan Plater, and this is XY, a show about mental health in men. On today's episode, we catch up with James Stewart, presenter for E! Live from the Red Carpet and Heart Radio. Our chat went back and forth between the personal and the cultural, discussing all kinds of topics, from confidence, our mutual experiences growing up — there was actually quite a lot of crossover there — and the concept of male identity. Full disclosure, I'm pretty sure we're both sci-fi nerds, so naturally we hit it off really well. Today's episode actually marks the end of season one. I just want to say a massive thank you to the thousands of listeners tuning in each week, and we'll be back later this year with more guests, more laughs, and more men sharing their story. Like with every interview on the XY show, today is not to be taken as advice. This is just a conversation between two people and should be treated as such. If you are looking for some support, I've left the details of some great organisations in the show notes, including those of Time to Change. And as always, I wanted to draw attention to their Ask Twice campaign. Sometimes we say we're fine when we're really not. A simple "are you sure you're okay" can make all the difference. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I've got a document. That's how serious I am. You've
got a document. Wow, you've brought the...
I brought a PDF.
You've brought the work.
It started well. Yeah, well, I just, you know, because if you talk about things like this, they people can accuse you of being a bit fluffy.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, no. Here's some. Let me hit some numbers with you. Let's bring the noise. Anyway, we'll
bring the facts to the table. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to getting into it. I think before we get into the meat of the day, I'd love to just kick off. The meat of it all.
Yeah.
Could you just kick off? Tell us a little bit about, you know, what as you do, presenter. How'd you get into that?
Oh gosh, mate. How long have we got, Dave? How long have we got?
Until half past 12.
Until half past 12.
As long as you need.
So I present telly and radio, essentially whatever they'll let me. And with acting, I always use this as like the example. It's obvious if you want to be an actor, there's a fairly like linear route into doing that. You go to drama school and you are either good or you're not. And then hopefully you get a good agent that makes you good or pretends that you're good. And hopefully things work out.
Pushes you in the right direction.
Exactly. Yeah. Presenting, there isn't such an obvious path. If you look at, as I did, like, you know, people I looked up to, like, you know, the Dermot O'Leary's of this world and Ryan Seacrest. Yeah. They kind of come from all different angles. So my route in was to work at a production company, empty dishwashers, make coffees. Still bad at that.
That's why you don't do it anymore.
Exactly, yeah. No one's been offered a coffee this whole time because I'm terrible at them. So I did that and kind of worked my way up from the grassroots, made contacts, delivered mail, worked in cloakrooms, worked as a barista, did all the kind of... Can I swear on this podcast?
Absolutely.
Did all the shit jobs.
It's mental health, man. We've got to be able to...
Yeah, it's going
to
get worse.
Get the emotions out.
And so with a bit of sort of making some interesting friends and connections along the way, eventually found my way to doing a bit of stuff on E, which is the entertainment channel.
Yeah.
So kind of learned my bread and butter doing live red carpet events, which was mad. So I was doing like Grammys and Oscars and all that.
That's like a big jump. I feel like we're making teas and coffees to red carpets.
I feel like I've missed out a few bits, but essentially that's what happened. I'll spare you the details of me like being a struggling presenter at home, crying into my girlfriend's lap. But it kind of... And that's the thing as well, I think, with society in 2019, it's everything's immediate, right? So we just see someone doing really well. Yeah. But there was a real part of me that didn't at all.
Took its time to get there.
Yeah, well, I guess with everyone.
Absolutely.
Still getting there, by the way. Still not completely figured it all out. But so got a bit of success doing E, worked at NBC for a bit, and then got into kind of the radio world. So got brought in for Capital, which was London.
You've got a very caramelly voice as well. Very good for radio.
Thanks.
Not that the
face as well.
I was going to say, not that the face isn't
very
good for TV.
On board for radio. And then moved to Heart. So I'm now on Heart, which we just became the biggest commercial station in the UK. We just overtook Radio 1. So
congratulations.
Yeah, things are going well. Woo! There's GIFs and memes made of that because we're very proud of it. And obviously we have adverts, they don't. So it's pretty cool. So it's a good place to be in. Sort of, I work within a lot of like branding worlds, ended up doing, well, I know you guys have got Jim Chapman on.
Indeed.
Done a bit of fashion-y stuff with Jim in that sort of world. He's far better and far taller than I will ever be. But we kind of similar kind of overlaps in that sense. But so just interested in what it is about being a man in 2019, which I guess is kind of how I met you.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's how we got to it.
That's how we got to it.
And so let's dive right in then. So I guess the big thing that I wanted to talk with you about today was toxic masculinity.
Cool.
I know it's something that you have spoken about a lot before, and it's also something that I know you're really passionate about. So I guess before I get into the Q&A bit of today, I kind of wanted to give you the mic and say,
oh, let me talk. All right.
What do you see as the problem with toxic masculinity in today's society?
Sure. Well, I don't know if it's a problem, but I think my general like approach to like mental health, and I'm sure this is what you guys talk about over the series of this podcast, is that it's just have, for me, a lot of problems in life, mental health or otherwise, could be alleviated by just talking. Mm-hmm. Like my mum, I'm sure like most mums used to say, like very old school, like a problem shared is a problem halved.
Yeah.
And I really think that if you apply that logic to pretty much any situation, whether, like I had a date last night and I, you know, I'm slightly hungover if I'm honest, because it was quite good. I didn't expect it to be.
If you got a hangover, it must have been.
Yeah, exactly. We have to, anyway, we'll get into that another time. But, you know, just talking to her about stuff, even that, like, you know, family stuff, if you talk about things, it generally makes things better for you and hopefully the other person. So my approach to sort of mental health is generally that. And then within men, I think we've got a problem as men because we're not great at chatting.
No, we're horrific at
it. We're really bad at it. Yeah. And I think, well, like, you know, female friends, girlfriends, they are really good at it.
Yeah.
And they set a really great precedent for what can be achieved.
Indeed.
Because it's just what girls do or have done. And I think there's a sort of stigma against men because it's sort of seen as a feminine trait.
Yeah.
Talking about feelings. Like if I met you, as I did a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, do you know what? This is really bad. Something really bad happened. You'd probably be quite surprised. And I probably wouldn't even say that to you. Whereas if you went to a pub on a Friday and men sort of had open conversations about their feelings and stuff, and we took it out of a feminine space and made it a kind of more just a normal thing to talk about.
Yeah.
I think for me, that's a really interesting, important thing. Like I was reading a Samaritan's report because I think they're quite interesting.
Absolutely. And a great resource.
Yeah. A great place to go, which they sort of make the point that men are struggling to cope with like major societal changes.
Yeah.
Stuff like social media, stuff like how, you know, sort of traditionally men are the breadwinners, traditionally we are the ones that provide.
Yeah.
And as that's changed over the years, men arguably haven't adapted brilliantly.
No.
Myself included.
Yep. I would agree with that from my perspective too.
Yeah.
Neither one of us, I would say either, is the fact that we're sitting here today would indicate that, you know, we're not entrenched in some alpha male bravado thing.
No, we sat, you're wearing a pink and white striped shirt. I look like an ice cream man. Like I look like I'm selling ice cream.
From the 70s, which is a cool vibe right now.
Exactly. So we are by no means the huge... Hugh Jackman, this is slightly off topic, I was talking about this, is the absolute perfect alpha male camp person.
Yeah.
In his show,
and
this is what I think is just brilliant, he went from being... He literally was lap dancing a man to being Wolverine.
Absolutely.
In the space of 35 seconds.
Which is, good for Hugh.
Great for Hugh. But so, we are by no means the sort of alpha chat. And so that's, but I think that kind of worked against me when I was younger. I don't know about you, but I definitely had a lot of stick at school for like liking the arts, liking drama, liking...
It's not a popular, spot to be in, is it?
No, not at state school in Basingstoke. No. There's a lot of...
Similarly in Glasgow.
I can imagine actually probably even more so up in Glasgow. But I think I kind of grew up in a society that didn't really encourage that.
Yeah.
So I just think that's probably why for me it's a passion point, because I grew up like in a place where it wasn't okay to be like.
And I think as well, it's not even about sitting here and saying like we've got the answers, be more like this.
We definitely don't.
Definitely no answers here. I think it's more about the fact that just being conscious of the fact that you're probably a bit, you're a bit entrenched in how you've grown up and what it means to be a man, and you carry that baggage with you, and just even wanting to address that.
And totally, and exactly that. And it's almost the sort of being unconsciously aware of it, like because most people aren't, like my dad wouldn't know that that's a thing.
No,
because that's just what's happened. He's just been brought up like that.
Totally.
But I think what's interesting is that we're experiencing as sort of like 80s 90s kids is that we are seeing these societal changes, and it's how men are adapting or not around that. And I guess, like, you know, there's a really interesting sort of thing that there was like a medical survey which said that almost all men so he's talking about men's suicide rates and stuff.
Yeah.
They said that almost all men reported that their masculine beliefs had led to them feeling isolated. And when they were feeling down, they were imposing that on other people.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, because it's like, if you are feeling bad as a man, you're not going to talk about it. No. And actually it's going to affect people around you because you're bottling stuff in.
Yeah. And you can become that toxic person. You know, like toxic masculinity, we talk about it a lot in terms of it's someone else's issue, you know, like they're doing it and I'm really comfortable with who I am, so I'm not the one at fault here.
Yeah,
totally. But A, it's an unconscious bias, and B, just you can be the toxic person in a situation, and acknowledging that and wanting to address that is like a huge step. And totally. I think what you've said is spot on the money, where there's loads of dudes out there who don't want to talk about how they feel because of a whole bunch of reasons. They maybe don't understand themselves. You know, it's like a societal pressure to not be weak or vulnerable, in air quotes.
Like James Bond.
And then that perpetuates it, you know?
Exactly. And well, James Bond's kind of the best example of, like, if someone said to me, what's toxic masculinity? I would say, if you look at someone like James Bond, who has spent however many years, 25 plus, more than that,
more.
75, 100 years?
200 years.
200 years, running away from problems, not committing to any relationship, doing all of these traits that we've grown up with and idolized.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, you see it, like, I'm going to talk about Love Island now, I'm sorry.
Let's do it.
Because I think
James Bond in Love Island comes up so much in this show.
Cultural things that we're beginning to, for the first time, see a shift in a show at Love Island where we're beginning to respect and find it interesting when men start to show emotion. Like Curtis last, I don't know when this will go out, but it's the bit where Curtis just cried because Amy left. Spoiler, Amy left. And the reaction on social media was incredible because we're seeing this vulnerability. And I think we're seeing that on mainstream TV probably for the first time that I can remember in a reality sense.
Yep.
And we're empathizing and people are going, actually, this is really cool. Like, good for you.
Yeah.
And so that's my point about how society's changing, how men are changing.
Yeah.
Is like, I do think it's encouraging.
And it's, I guess it's a, shows like that, I think, are a double-edged sword because... And I do actually want to talk to you about the media in a wider sense.
Oh, the media.
The good old media.
Love the media. Please don't talk too much because I do have a mortgage.
And and you need to keep that job. Yeah. But I think someone like Love Island, for example, has been accused. And I'm not saying it is a good or bad thing in society. I'm just saying that when you look at it...
What would you say about it?
If I had to pick...
Yeah, if it was me and you having a beer, what would it...
I would say that situations like you've just described, where we see genuine... guy-to-guy emotion and interaction and them expressing their feelings can never be a bad thing. I think the wider purview of the Love Island brand has done more to entrench gender stereotypes and heterosexual stereotypes.
Totally.
And so I think that on the whole, I'm not sure that it's... I don't think it's like fixing anything.
No.
Just because somebody cried on TV. But I do think that, you're right. I'm not sure if that would have gone out in season one. I'm not sure if they would have led with that, you know,
exactly.
When they were chopping it up in the mix.
I totally agree with you. But from the point of view of toxic masculinity and what we're talking about this morning, it's getting there.
Completely.
But I totally agree.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the only positive thing to come out of it.
And the thing is that, so my wife doesn't watch it because she just thinks it's drivel. I love it. Like, I absolutely love Love Island. Like, I just can't get enough of it. I want to watch it every morning. It's my morning routine. I watch the previous night's episode with my coffee and my breakfast. And I find it so entertaining. And that's essentially what it's supposed to do, is entertain.
Absolutely.
Despite the fact that I'm making this podcast and kind of getting up in my box about toxic masculinity
well,
and stuff.
Exactly. That's the best thing about it.
It is just providing this constant source of entertainment. But I think where that kind of takes me next is I didn't learn my male stereotypes and toxic masculinity in society. I didn't learn that at home, you know. I had a great role model as a father in that sense, which means that I was trying to work out where you get it from. And I guess you just get it from magazines and you get it from colleagues and you get it from teachers.
Yeah, James Bond.
Yeah, James Bond. You get it from all over the shop.
I love James Bond. I feel like I really just slagged off. I really like James Bond. It's just quite
Why'd
a good
Why'd you
way
hate
of,
Daniel Craig?
I know, what a great guy. And I've worked on, it's a really good example of just something we all can know.
You know what?
It's
the evolution of a saga like that, which is a reflection of society. And even just things like he used to smoke and doesn't anymore. It's not culturally appropriate or cool anymore for him to smoke and drink loads and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Nor is it really appropriate for him to be seen in the movies to sleep with like four girls in the space of 2 hours.
Yeah, he's become much more monogamous as time's gone.
Totally.
Yeah.
But that, I guess, and the flip side of that is, although it's changed societally in that sense, there now is more of an obligation for James Bond to be shredded.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
Like Sean Connery on the beach back in the 60s or whatever.
Rocking the rug hair, the hair.
Yeah,
the
totally.
Chest. Yeah.
That's changed massively as well in terms of what we see men to be.
Well, and Love Island, again, is a pretty good example of that. Yeah. I mean, those boys are in some shape. And it's
bloody good shape.
Yeah, bloody good shape. But it's exactly, it's what, that's what, you know, a man, is that what a man should be? Is that what?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember I had a real argument with an ex once because she sort of said, I really like manly men. I was like, what does that mean? She's like, well, I like my men to be men.
What does
like,
that mean?
What does that mean? Like, I'm a bloke. You know, we've all got the right bits that mean we're, you know, it's an XY podcast. like, that's
have
why
the
we're
chromosome.
Here. But like, that was an interesting point. You know, I would encourage people that if you're listening to this to think, if you've ever said that or you've received that feedback. I get it a lot, like, you're not like a manly guy, but like, But what? Because why?
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. And I don't have the answer to that.
Did you try to change yourself after that?
When I was younger, for sure. Like, I got into rugby. I liked rugby, but you do those things as a kid because you think that's what makes you a bloke, mm-hmm. a man. You know, I mm-hmm. tried ale. Terrible idea. I'll have a Corona, please, at the absolute max.
Can I have a Sol?
Yeah.
Bit of lime in the chocolate.
Get a gin and tonic. So I think that's a really interesting kind of way of, if you sort of struggle with what toxic masculinity is, or you think it's a weird expression, which it is, if you just sort of say, what does it take to be a man, or what does that mean to you? That's a good starting point.
Yeah, totally. And I think that it's a pretty all-encompassing term. It applies to so much.
Yeah, exactly. You talk about the physical side of, like, the, you know, the body image side of things. That's a thing. Emotional stuff is a thing.
Where can you remember when you started to collect an idea of what a man was?
Yeah, that's a good question. God, you're good at this. Probably a little bit like you. I think that's almost the problem with this, is that it's a generational thing. So if we keep getting this passed down, that's when it will become a thing. If we start talking about it, then we can change it, right?
Yeah.
So I think probably for my dad, the same as most guys would. And I think that came from probably sport.
Yeah.
I think sport's a big part. I don't know enough about sport, or it's not my passion point to talk about it, but
ditto.
It informs a lot of masculine culture.
Yeah. Oh, completely.
Like, and you know, stuff like stag do's, mm-hmm. and this idea about bringing, I've just been on one, you bring in all these blokes together and doing bloke things.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Pints and all that shit.
Drink down this pint. And otherwise you're not cool.
Yeah. Take your clothes off and run down the street naked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what if, okay. But so that's interesting. This kind of stag group culture of being a bloke, which I'm not against. I had the best time ever.
Yeah, 100%.
My best friend's getting married on Friday. I'm the best man, but
congrats.
Yeah, thanks.
That's really exciting.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, somewhere from childhood then.
Somewhere from childhood, I think. Sport has a big part of it. I think also like a fit, like I was never, I don't know, this might be interesting. I never thought of it like this. I wasn't physically the biggest kid.
Yeah.
So I think that also plays a part. I think if you're physically not as, like, maybe that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
No, totally. I think if you get to a kind of sentient age, and I'm going to guess that's like 12, 13, and you're already playing football and you're quite like athletic and popular at school.
The girls like you at school.
Yeah, totally. You're the tallest. Remember when you were a kid, being tall was like the thing. Who's the tallest in your class?
That's all you wanted to be.
Or how many TVs does your dad have?
No, being tall was like the thing.
That was the thing to do.
He's tall. He's probably still where he's, you know, it's always those people
That's exactly it. But I think if you get to that kind of early adolescent age and you're already like playing football and doing all of the culturally normal in quotation mark things that that men do and that boys do, then you probably don't challenge it, because why would you challenge the system that actually totally suits you at that age?
Exactly.
Whereas if you're a bit like me, and what it sounds like you a bit, like I was into singing, I was into drama, didn't go down that hot in a school of 200 people on the west coast of Scotland.
Mate, same. When I was like, I want to sing Rent here, that wasn't
it's not gonna, like, it's probably
quite musical,
not gonna
but it's not really what you want to be doing at age 11.
Yeah, totally.
Skinny white boy in
so you end up like quite a, you end up like quite a young man who's questioning things that he probably doesn't actually have the societal awareness or intellect to really fathom.
Absolutely.
So you start challenging it a lot earlier on, I think.
And that's why doing this is great, because this wasn't around when we were, this wasn't a thing that was spoken about that I was aware of.
No.
Whereas now I feel like that is the great thing. On the flip side of social media, I was sort of slagging off it before, the great thing about these new forms of media is that it allows us to do this and to have a chat. And if one person listens and goes, oh, that's me, I don't really like that stuff, then it's okay. It works out just fine.
Well, that's it, isn't it?
And actually, I think I've learned, I was terrible with girls for years. I arguably still am, single at 29. But I was always terrible with girls. And I think it was because a big part of me didn't really know how to, I was worried that they'd judge me for being too feminine. But what I've learned over the years is that actually, if you can get in touch with those emotions, in my experience, it's quite an attractive quality from the opposite sex, because it makes you aware of who you are, which people seem to like.
Vulnerability.
So I think if you can show vulnerability, and I would encourage people to do so, it can work out in all aspects of life, in work.
Completely across the board.
Yeah, in relationships. I mean, you're married. I'm sure there's been you've had to show vulnerability to get to that point.
If you talking about being vulnerable, if you ask anyone that was at my wedding,
did you cry?
I cried. Did I cry? Did I cry?
It's a flood.
The entire way through my vows, it took me about five attempts to say I do. Yeah, I was just like straight through it. the entire speech, and I really count myself as quite the orator.
Oh, mate, I'd agree.
I count myself as a really great pitcher when it comes to like winning clients when I was at agency sides.
Oh, yeah, you had a pretty good job before.
Yeah, right? I love big presentations with like big dogs from the company. I loved the opportunity to perform in a professional or like music or acting, whatever. So I'd spent so long writing the perfect wedding speech, and I think there was three words that anybody caught of it. I cried for 10 minutes straight.
This is my worry. This is very off topic. We can probably cast about. But on Friday, I'm a best man, and I think I'm only the best man because I talk for a living. So I think he was like, let's just let him do it because it'll be all right. But I've never been more nervous. Like, obviously, I've spoken to literally millions of people on a weekly basis. There's about 20 people in Ibiza on Friday. I'm shitting my pants.
Yeah.
I'm so scared.
Ibiza wedding, though. Sounds fun.
Yeah, it should be quite fun.
Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, I'm staying on for a bit as well. So if you're in Ibiza,
come on out. Yeah.
But yeah, so sorry. That was very off topic.
Not at all.
To bring it back to this, I think it's great that we're even having this chat because this wasn't something that was there when I was 13, 14. And yeah, I was definitely, I think it starts from sports, physical stature.
Yeah.
Just the things that you associate with being a man. If you think about what that would mean, you know, it's watching football, it's drinking pints, and that's not a bad thing at all.
No, it's fun.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
But that's probably where a lot of like masculine culture stems from.
Totally.
And like, yeah, lad culture.
And I guess I've got this thing because I think the media gets such a raw deal in terms of it's to blame for perpetuating these kind of things. Mm. But my wife reads a certain newspaper app that I won't name.
Is it the one that 300 million people also read?
Yeah, totally. Really, high-grade stuff.
We know the one. Yeah. The Sidebar of Shame.
The Sidebar of Shame.
Which I featured on at Wimbledon because I was very drunk. So
you've been on the Sidebar of Shame?
Quite a few times. Shame. Yeah, worst time. You don't realise how many people read that magazine, that newspaper.
Everybody.
Literally everyone.
Okay, well, here's the crux of the question then, because who's really responsible for the narrative in terms of the zeitgeist of the media? You know, is it
so interesting?
The publisher for creating the content, which perpetuates big muscles on men and drinking pints and laddie culture and football?
Yep.
Or is it us as consumers? Because we get the content that we deserve a bit, you know?
And they wouldn't put it out if there wasn't a market for it.
No.
So I think there's a bit of both. What I would say about media in general is as much as there are huge negatives, there are huge positives. And I think social media, even stuff like that, like I said,
I founded a media company. You know,
you literally set up a media company. you're the biggest advocate of media.
Media's great, gang.
But having a forum to chat like this is one of the really great things about media that didn't exist previously. Yeah. But then on the flip side, traditional media like the online, we love you, Rupert Murdoch. You're great.
Top.
Yeah. It's not, well, where does it start from? Probably us as consumers, and I would include myself within that because I also read that app.
Yep.
I can't not, because I work in this world, and sadly I need to know what Justin Bieber had for breakfast. Because who doesn't?
Yeah.
To tell the people on the radio. But I think if we weren't going, like my mum's the worst, she'll text me like about my mates and go, did you know that, like my friend Lila, did you know Lila was at Wimbledon yesterday? I was like, yeah, mum. She's my mate and she's seen it on, that's how she gets information.
Yeah.
So if that's your information source, then that you're to blame because that's where you go and they're to blame for providing you with what you see.
So it's quite circular.
I feel like that. But I don't know how you feel about this. Where does it stop? Will it stop?
Probably I think there's like an elitist element to it, which I count myself in as well before I start having a go at the bourgeoisie. I'm not about to like fly the flag of revolution here. But normally when
I bring a flag with him. Yeah, I did wonder why.
Shut up. Normally when I talk about big societal issues, whether it's politics or whether it's mental health or whether it's, I don't know, relationships or just, you know, that meaty stuff that you kind of set the world to rights.
Yeah.
Right.
Like now.
Yeah, exactly. Like right now. I normally do it in a scenario that's over a bottle of wine in my garden with
so
my beagle. And this is the point, is that normally I can, and I think we all to a degree can silo off, elements of our life where it's totally fine for me to read the Daily Mail because I'm inherently a good person who does care about positive change in society.
Yeah.
So you don't really think that the two are...
It's like carbon emissions. You offset them. You go, it's fine. I'm going to fly to LA because
I drink oat milk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's exactly that. And that's the... Well, that's the problem.
Yeah.
For us all.
Completely.
But I think why I would be quite interested to come back to the kind of the sort of masculinity side. A lot of people say like, why are you interested in it? Why does it matter?
Yeah.
And the reason this is deep, we're getting in now.
Let's
and
do
I don't
it.
Apologize for that because this is what needs to happen.
No, let's do it.
You are, as a bloke aged 20 to 49, more likely to die from suicide than cancer, heart disease, or a road accident.
Yep.
84 people in the UK, blokes, take their lives each week.
84 a week. That's a lot.
It's a lot of people. And
I knew the stat that it was the biggest killer, but actually when you...
84 people. Yeah. So I don't know if you remember this morning, there was that thing, ITV did that thing on the roof where they had people...
That was great.
Really cool, like visual representation of... I actually have a picture, you can't see because it's a podcast, but there's a picture.
For anyone who didn't see it, they put these statues of silhouettes of men standing on the edge of a building. It was really impactful.
Which to demonstrate how many people...
Yeah.
Do, and I'm sorry to bring this tone down. We will resume lulls soon, but... This is why this episode is important.
Yeah.
And that's my argument. I think a big part of why so many people do that is because they feel isolated because of masculine beliefs.
Yeah.
And societal changes and how they're not dealing with them.
Yeah.
And that's why I think having a dialogue is important.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
About men, because a lot of people go, it's just bullshit. Like, you know, it's another stupid journalist word that people have thrown out into the media to try and generate some scaremongering. It's not at all. It's real life.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we forget. And there's actually people, the impact is the most extreme impact.
Yeah.
But you don't think about it, because we think about cancer and we think about heart disease and, you know, poor people that get stabbed in London weekly. You don't think about people that take their own lives.
No.
And I would argue I'm not saying they're all like this, but I think a lot of it is because we feel we don't know how to deal with our feelings. Like Love Island, again, with Mike. The guy was thrown into this huge amount of fame, I'd imagine fortune, and it just tailed off. And how on earth are you supposed to deal with that?
I can't remember what the figure was, but it was something, and this figure is not correct, but it was something like in the 400 days after the series aired, he did like 370 appearances, like at clubs. And
PAs,
yeah.
Which are huge financial. I mean, it's 10, 15 grand a pot, isn't it?
But the pressure for someone who previously was an ordinary bloke,
exactly.
Then he disappears from society because you're in there alone. You know, you don't know what's getting said about you, all the rest of it. And then you come out and then all of a sudden you've got like an agent, a manager, a publicist.
Yep.
You've got brands knocking at your door. You've got girls, guys in your DMs. Like you become something overnight.
Yeah.
Which you maybe asked for, and that's maybe why you went on the show, but you didn't know what you were asking for.
Totally. I totally agree. And it's how you deal with that. But it's not, but that's an extreme level, but it can be, you know, Dave in the pub can be having the same feelings on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
Like if, you know, I don't know what's going on, but that's my point. And that's why I really think that we have to challenge slightly the masculine beliefs and not put so much pressure on ourselves as men.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's a lot in the media at the moment about women, and that is brilliant and like couldn't be more for it. But let's also not forget about blokes
who do. And I think the point that you made there about Dave in the pub, whoever Dave is,
we love Dave.
A lot of the reason he probably doesn't talk about his problem is that and I think guys tell themselves this a lot, they think that their problem is not worth sharing.
Exactly.
Or it's embarrassing or whatever.
Totally.
But actually just get it out.
Yeah. And it takes someone like, you know, you and I that are a bit better at putting things out to kind of trigger that. And I think if they go, oh, they're talking about, you know, I talk very openly about like ex relationships. I use relationships as a good example because it's one thing we can all relate to, right? We've all been in love, or hopefully been in love.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
I am married to it.
I was going
to
say, spoiler. Is that why you're crying at the wedding so much? I love her.
Don't want to do it.
But that's a great way of illustrating that kind of vulnerability that I think you can show on any level, whether you're you know, an A-list celebrity or you're Dave in the pub.
Yeah.
Just saying something, what I promise will make you feel better.
Completely.
You know, that the suicide is the extreme outcome, but I think it's important to remember that that's why we're having it. It's not for the sake of this conversation.
Yeah.
We're not here because we just want to chat. It's important.
Yeah. It's,
we want to chat as well. But.
Yeah. We wanted to catch up and chat, but also it's worth, remembering that we're here for a reason. And the reason I started this show was because I wanted guys to feel like they could talk more, and hopefully the more they hear other men talk, the more that they'll feel comfortable talking themselves.
I hope so. I think that's what's great about what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I know you got a whole series about it, so.
Gosh.
I'm excited.
Well, we could sit here and stroke me all day. But, I guess there's another area that I want to talk about, which is a little bit more personal to you.
Yeah,
and your industry for me is kind of...
I put my headphones on, it's getting serious.
Yeah. Tuned in.
Welcome back to Piers Morgan's Life Stories.
Welcome back to Desert Island Discs. Yeah. I'm Kirsty.
That's really good.
Well, she's Scottish, Kirsty, so.
Yeah, you'd be terrible if
you didn't. What luxury item would you... I've been planning that for a while.
That's because you really wanted to do that.
I really wanted
to go for it so well.
God, if I could get on Desert Island Discs, that's the career mid.
Hey, that's gold, isn't it?
Yeah, that's absolutely the
best. I can't help
thing.
If that's why you've got me here, I can't help you, so I shall leave now.
Anyway, thanks for tuning in, guys.
Come back next week.
No, but I wanted to ask, I guess, as a presenter, model, kind of social man about town, all that kind of stuff. I feel like your profession is essentially taking all of the internal bugbears and anxieties and pressures and aesthetic and all that kind of stuff that normal people deal with in their day-to-day life, and then it puts it on speed because you're proactively putting yourself into an industry where your face and voice and what you look like is at the forefront of your brand.
Mate, absolutely. I am, as a human, this is not the industry for me. I'm not built for it. Like, I'm a Cancerian. That's really vague, but I'm quite an emotional person. I worry about things. I cling on to things. And in a world where I told you how I got into this at the start and I made it seem great.
You made coffees and then you went to the red carpet.
It was
that easy.
But the rejection level, even now, if I looked at my phone, there'd be two emails being like, you're not getting something.
Right.
And that's very real. So I think, firstly, if I had kids, I would really caution them against getting into presenting, acting, music, model, whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's really fucking brutal.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And the highs, I'm sure Dave can attest to you over there. The highs are high and the lows are really shit.
Right. How'd you deal with that?
It was really hard, crying a lot. Yeah,
which is good.
What really helped me is having mates that didn't come from this world, because actually to have mates that take the piss out of you because you were 16 and you fell over, it reminds you that it doesn't really matter. Like, no one's died.
Literally.
You are just talking, and there's always going to be someone better looking, better at what they do than you are, and you just have to accept that.
Yeah.
And things may go your way sometimes and sometimes don't. But the thing I found really hard to do was switch off from being like James Stewart, you know, the presenter, model, actor, to just James.
Yeah.
And I found that really hard to do. Like, I couldn't, I was
swapping between the two.
Yeah. And I was always on.
Okay.
And that was really difficult because it was exhausting.
Yeah. When did that change? When did you have the wake up moment that you needed to?
An ex-girlfriend said to me, they were like, you're not like who, I don't know who you are. And that really resonated because I was like, fuck, neither do I.
Yeah.
And I think that's when this sort of, the kind of emotional
stuff. Fuck, that's a lot.
Yeah,
I don't know who you are.
She was just like, and she was younger than me, and she completely hit the nail on the head because I completely lost sense of, like, I was just living life through a lens of like what I thought I should be.
Yeah.
And I was, you know what it's like in this world. You meet people that want to be mates with you for not always the right reasons and all that.
You have industry mates, you know?
Yeah. Like, I'm not going to tell you. And that's probably part of it. I wasn't talking about stuff. Mm-hmm. And actually, I think having mates that work, like my mate's a policeman, talking to him about stuff, and he's like, well, someone literally died today.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, actually, it's not too bad what I'm doing.
My job at the magic factory is like selling magic beans. And,
So I think that really helped. But I think a big part, what helped me a lot, and kind of
perspective was a big thing for you.
Perspective and coming back to just getting in touch with why I got into this and remembering that I'm really lucky to be doing it.
Yeah.
And like a sense of reality. Because you do get lost in it, and you mm-hmm. I'm always someone that wants the next thing. I'm not very good at being present.
Nope, I get that.
Because you can't, because you feel like if you take your foot off that accelerator, you've lost it.
Coasting is
I would never
almost
take time.
Sudden death in terms of the world of celebrity and publicity.
Mate, that's people's livelihoods. Exactly. And you almost don't take time off. I was talking to a singer about this, a well-known singer, and he was saying the same thing. It's the second you take some time off, mm-hmm. you feel like everything's going to crash down. And imagine that.
Yeah.
People, you know,
even if it's not, the feeling that you're then getting beat out of the charts or whatever.
Exactly.
So it's a
strange kind of conveyor belt. I definitely deal with it better now, and because I just try and think about it in perspective, like you said.
Yeah.
But it's a great industry. I don't know if I haven't put anyone off doing
it. No, totally.
But it's really hard. It's a lot harder than I thought it would be.
And I think that's important as well, is that we're really obsessed with qualifying things. As a species, I think guys are really bad at feeling the need to qualify everything. Like, they'll say, oh, I'm feeling kind of shit about this, but it's fine though. It's like, whatever, you know, I'm fine. It's fine.
It's what it is. Love Island
totally.
Chat.
Yeah, totally. but even just with you there, like, you should be allowed to talk about the struggle that you've had without it necessarily meaning you hate your job or whatever. Like, you love what you do.
I'm
just saying that.
Yeah, it's just a part of it.
Yeah.
In that world, and like people like DM me and stuff on Instagram, and everyone wants to do it. And I would encourage that. But just be aware that it's not like on my Instagram. If you went on my Instagram now, you'd be like, he's fucking killing it. But
you would.
But I, you know, you don't sort of think about the kind of shit bits, which there are. And I think it's just important to know that.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Hopefully it'll be all right though.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
But that's the other thing. You have to just have this, the best and the worst thing about this job I'm sure you can attest to, is because you don't know what's going to happen each day. It's quite exciting because each day you could just get a call that changes your life one way or the other.
Yeah.
And I like that. Some people just aren't built for it.
No. And I think you need to practice a lot of mindfulness, whether you are proactively practicing mindfulness and using Headspace or whatever.
Oh, I'm not good at that. I don't do that.
So as a side note, I heard recently that Headspace is going to start being prescribed by doctors.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I think it makes sense in a lot of ways, whether it's the Headspace app or meditation.
Yeah.
Getting comfortable with the idea of new age practices and remedies.
It's good.
Yeah, it is good.
We shout out to my, I work at Global, who own Heart and Capital and LBC and Radio X. We, and so does Dave, our amazing facilitator today.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. No trouble. We have, they now make that, they give us free access to that every month, which is pretty cool.
That's
not
awesome.
For freelancers. No,
I've never heard of this.
But on staff. So like companies, I'm using it as an example, like companies are
No, that's a fantastic thing.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. They told us in a company meeting, then we're not freelancers. I'm freelancer, so sadly it doesn't affect me. But the vast majority of people are staff there. And I think that's pretty cool to have access because you had to pay like 10 quid a month for it or something.
Well, if you're going to give a company employee a gym membership...
Why not
to exercise their body, giving them something to exercise their mind, and that makes more than good sense.
I like that. That's a good expression.
Yeah, totally.
Exercise your mind, not just your body.
And it ties back to the whole stigma. If an athlete broke his leg, there's no stigma with that. You know, there's no shame in that. Whereas if an athlete came out and said he was suffering from really bad panic attacks before he went on the pitch, probably wouldn't want to do that because he would think it made him feel weak.
Well, Zayn Malik's a really good example of this.
Love Zayn.
He speaks very highly of you. He's never performed live because of these stage fright issues. I remember being at a Capital Summertime Ball once and he was literally about to come out and didn't. And it's interesting because you are, no one is immune from mental health.
No.
And I feel like more and more so people are coming out and talking about it, which is brilliant.
I didn't know that about Zayn. I knew that he'd, I knew that he'd had his issues with anxiety and stuff and didn't love being in the public eye, but I had no idea it was that.
As far as I'm aware, he's not performed. I've never certainly seen him perform at a live gig.
Now that I think about it, I've never seen him live.
Has anyone ever seen Zayn perform live? And that's really sad because he's a fucking talented guy.
Yeah, super talented.
And he can still express that obviously through audio, but like, I mean, music is supposed to be a live experience.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. And I also use, I was reading about Kit Harington recently.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you saw that he was, you were saying, it's similar to the kind of mic, I can't say his last name, Philip.
Thalophetus, I think.
Yeah. Kit Harington was rumoured to be involved in this, he checked himself into a mental health clinic. He was.
Didn't know that.
But he basically, and it's interesting because it affects everyone, and it goes back to what we were saying about how fame can impact on you and media and all that. You've got a guy that just wanted to be an actor.
Yeah.
Signed up for a pilot, didn't really expect it to happen.
Yeah.
It becomes the biggest TV show that's ever been seen.
Yeah.
How the fuck do you deal with that? And he maybe struggled a little bit with it.
Didn't do very well.
That's really sad because obviously there wasn't like a, I don't know, I feel kind of bad for the guy because he never signed up for that.
And I hear that from a lot of big actors, whether it's on other podcasts or interviews or whatever. The real biggies that you just love, the big household names who keep their nose clean in terms of the press and all that kind of stuff, they often say that they just love to act. You know, like I showed up to be an actor.
Yeah.
And because I was great at what I did, I became huge. But I really hate the press junkets and all that.
You think about like the Meryl Streeps and the, Jesus, just one example, but that's
true. The best example of someone
at that
scale.
Of someone that just is not asked about any of this media stuff,
but continues
just loves
to knock
craft.
It out.
I feel like that's like with him, but he's a really good, like relevant, recent example of someone why we have to have these conversations. And I think we can do a lot better.
And I guess actually when you gave that example, just to kind of check something in myself, when you said that, I was like, oh shit, he's probably not going to do it anymore then. When in actual fact, after everything that we've just spoken about, surely it's, well, no, like he needs some help and he's getting some help.
Yeah.
And then come back and be like, right, I'm ready to make another movie. It doesn't mean that he's saying I'm done being an actor or famous. He's just, you know, he's doing, that's good that he's checked himself in. If he needs that help, that's a positive step that he's taken.
Totally. And it's a pitfall of fame is that we live in a society now where reality TV, we think everyone wants to be famous, but I think that's not always the case.
Yeah.
And it's important to remember that because people sometimes just want to do it because they love it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I'm going to take away from this interview, actually, is if I told you I was going to the hospital with a broken leg, you wouldn't think that's so sad that he's got to go to the hospital.
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't think about the broken leg, you're just thinking it's sad that I've checked myself into a hospital.
Yeah.
And the same would apply if I told you I was going to see a therapist. You think, oh, fuck, it's so bad.
He's fucked.
He's got to go to a therapist. Like, that's so sad. Whereas you wouldn't actually look at that, oh, good, like, that's good that it's getting dealt with. You know?
And that's what we want to, that's exactly what we should take away.
Absolutely.
It's positive that you're making changes. If you're taking those steps, you're doing something well.
Fantastic.
Listening to this is doing something well. I hope it does something for someone.
Every episode of this I've recorded has actually made me feel more like well-rounded as a human being.
Do you know what I'm taking away from this?
What's that?
Just the fact that you spoke three words at your wedding and cried for the rest of it.
I mean, there's a video of it, which I can show you off there.
Please show me that.
Yeah.
All right.
But you're going to think the audio quality is shit. That's not shit audio. That's just me crying. There's just an overture.
Can we play that in at the end of this?
Yeah, we could maybe drop that in.
We'll have a conversation.
It's like a little bit.
Thanks for having me, mate.
Just before you go.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Just before you go.
Before I go.
A question that I ask everyone at the end of every episode.
Oh, yeah.
Which is becoming called Cliche Corner.
Ooh, nice.
What advice would you give to your younger self?
Life is not a dress rehearsal.
Ooh.
That's good, isn't it?
Quick answer.
Oof.
I didn't brief you.
I was on
that.
A date. No, you didn't. I was on this date last night and we were talking about that. It was kind of what we bonded over. And that's why it's fresh in the mind.
Life is not a dress rehearsal.
My dad always says it to me because like when I am, my mum was very ill when I was younger. She had breast cancer. And
sorry to hear that.
Yeah. It was really sad. And
okay now?
Yeah. It's a nice story.
Fabulous.
Yeah, that's a horrible way to start it because you go, oh my God, what happened? But she, 10 years, they say 10 years after is like the time it's most likely to come back and then you're out of remission. So she's out of remission. I was 16 at the time. Da, 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 da. Anyway, because of that, it made me sort of realize you can't have regret. Well, right. I didn't want to live a life with regret.
Yeah.
So a big part of why I chose this career is because I didn't want to look back and go, I wish I'd tried something.
Yeah.
And that's why I don't think life can be a dress rehearsal because you only really get one shot.
Yeah.
So if...
Do it or don't.
Yeah, I'm making a dating show based on going up to people in real life because I think we've all been in a situation where we've seen someone we fancy, we don't do anything, we go home and go, fuck, I wish I'd done that.
Yeah.
And that's how I met this girl last night. I went up to her and I was like, I want to get your number. Not because I'm arrogant, just because I was like, I think you're really beautiful and I would hate to not try.
Yeah, you just wanted to take your shot. Yeah.
So life isn't a dress rehearsal. Do try something because what's the worst that's going to happen?
Brav.
There you go.
Love it. Thanks so much for joining me, man.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to listen back. On that note, see you later.
James, thanks so much.
Thank you, mate.
You've been listening to James Stewart on XY with me, Ewan Plater. Once again, thank you so much for tuning in not just to this episode, but for the first series of XY. And as I say, we'll be back later in the year with more episodes. Until then, thank you and good night.